When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
$40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Girl, this thing.
Turn to my old dress.
Girl, this thing.
Great gowns. Beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Girl, no, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
Ooh, that was a sexy voice, Chel.
Was it?
And welcome back to the Every Outfit podcast. Now, you might think that since we cover weekly what is going on, that we'll be talking about the Lady Gaga album. But guys, we have not processed it yet. So instead, we're going to talk about the Oscars.
Yes.
Chelsea, I get the sense that the Fuckettes maybe think we live a very glamorous life because we're in Los Angeles, we're sort of in media. But really, we are on the outskirts of Hollywood. And the amazing thing about the vastness of Los Angeles is that if you are not in the entertainment industry this past week, it's like the Oscars never really happened. Like, you can have an existence without understanding that the biggest event of this city is going on.
I don't know if you can, because it shuts down so many parts of Los Angeles. I mean, mostly just Hollywood and Beverly Hills, but like it was slammed in Beverly Hills this weekend.
That's interesting because I heard you yourself had a celebrity run-in.
I did. I had a very unique celebrity encounter. I went to the Balenciaga store on Rodeo Drive because I had pre-ordered this t-shirt that they made with Isabelle Huppert's face on it months ago. They made this series of kind of like shitty bootleg looking shirts with all of their brand ambassadors, Nicole Kidman, Kim Kardashian, etc. And I was in the dressing room trying it on, and Tat was trying on the Michelle Yeoh shirt. And we walked out of the dressing room to show our friend that works in the store, and Oscar winner Michelle Yeoh was standing right there.
Balenciaga ambassador.
We conjured her. I don't know how. And she immediately started laughing because of the absurdity of the situation.
And you had no choice but to ask for a photo.
Well, yeah, went in Rome, went on Rodeo. The funniest thing, I don't know if we talked about it, but Tat asked Taylor Swift for a picture on Rodeo when she was a child, like years and years ago. It was filmed by paparazzi at the time, this interaction, and it recently went viral on TikTok.
I can't believe you're bringing this up. Did she say you could bring this up?
We're not going to link to it. She doesn't want it out there just because she looks like a little girl. Like, it's not the kind of image she's trying to cultivate. But I suppose the Michelle Yeoh thing was just the latest in a series of bizarre Rodeo Drive celebrity encounters.
I was trying to lay the groundwork because we're going to talk about our weekends, and they do sound very glamorous, but this is not the norm for us.
No, but what was this Oscars party that you went to?
Well, I was invited to the Women in Film nominees party because, Chelsea, I know you think of me as a podcaster, but I myself am a woman in film now. Or so I thought, because I was invited to this event. They have you check in, and it is a party for the women that are nominated for the Oscars that year. There were three sections to check in: people who were nominated, people that were the press, and people who were guests. And I went straight to the guest line, and I was like, I'm a guest. I am a woman adjacent to film. And they were like, we don't have your name. And I went, that's not a great way to start things off. And then the press person was like, you're on our list. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm less a woman in film and more, I guess, a press woman in film. And it's because the lovely Chandra Jackson, who's the director of marketing and communications, is a fan of our podcast. I feel like you should have been there, Chelsea, because I walk in and who's the first woman I see but Diane Warren.
Oh, incredible. I stood behind her in line once. Looks just like Shane from The L Word.
This is the other reason you should have been there and I shouldn't have, honestly, because it did feel like a cut scene from The L Word. Just the most stylish lesbians of a certain age in double-breasted blazers.
Oh, that's great.
All surrounding Diane Warren.
One of us.
I kind of felt that way. I didn't really have any expectations for the event, and it was truly incredible and very major because our favorite, Coralie Farget, was there. Cynthia Erivo. Monica Barbaro.
Joan Baez girl.
Yeah, which now has me thinking, is she related to the Daily's Michael Barbaro? I feel like there would have been an article about this.
Yeah, I think we would have known that if that was the case.
But having grown up in Los Angeles, I don't know if I've mentioned that before on this podcast. Growing up adjacent to this industry, I'm used to kind of seeing celebrity interactions go on, but I've never experienced this new phenomenon, which is Cynthia Erivo walked in and, you know, everyone stopped and turned towards her, understandably so. She went to speak to Monica Barbaro. Of course, all the press photographers at the event start photographing it. But what I've never experienced before is I just watched 20 people raise their cell phones and just start filming Cynthia Erivo and Monica Barbaro having a conversation.
That's so awkward.
It was so weird. It's like they all raised their phones at the same time. I assume to post it to be like, look what I'm witnessing.
That seems nuts to me. Like, I would understand if it was like Barack Obama at some random restaurant in Silver Lake.
Right.
But like, that seems inappropriate. Anywho, before we get into the Oscars, I just want to thank everyone who sent me such kind messages and comments on our Patreon last week. It really meant a lot to Tad and I, and we were feeling the love, and I really hope that I can avoid crying on the podcast this week. I think I'm going to be able to, although I have had another hard week. I lost someone else this week. I lost my Aunt Betty, who I loved dearly and was the most fabulous woman. She actually reminded me of Elizabeth Taylor a lot because she had all of these great romances and this very dry sense of humor and this toughness that I was always really enamored with.
And she also loved to wear White Diamonds by Elizabeth Taylor?
No, she had much better taste than that, thank God. She actually wore Opium, the original Opium. She was 94 years old. She had pancreatitis. She was chronically ill. And last week, she informed the family that she wanted to end her life via medically assisted suicide, which is legal in Canada. And when I called her to talk about it, she said that she had scheduled her doctor's appointment to accommodate the Oscars because she wanted to watch it one last time. I think this really speaks to how similar we are.
I was going to say, truly a woman after your own heart.
Yes. And I was so taken with that that I flew to Canada for a single day to watch the Oscars with my aunt. We drank champagne and made fun of celebrities and had a really good time. And after Best Picture, she gave me a big hug and that was it.
All right, guys, I'm going back over to hug Chelsea.
But honestly, it was the most special Oscars ever, and I'm so grateful that I was able to be there, and I'm so grateful that she was able to exit this world on her own terms. I think it's incredibly brave, and, you know, like I said, she was a tough bitch, so she passed away yesterday, and it's sad, but I feel at peace with it, and I'm glad that I have this memory kind of fused with the Oscars and that I can think of her during the Oscars in the future, and I think it's nice. This was a very emotionally charged Oscars for me, and not just because Demi Moore lost.
I was going to say, because of course you were on my mind this weekend during the ceremony. And I was thinking, thank God this was a good ceremony.
I know, same. I was very concerned. I was like, if my aunt's last Oscar sucks, I'm going to be so pissed.
You could have had a Seth MacFarlane year.
I could have had a James Franco Anne Hathaway year.
Well, that would have been at least memorable.
I am very excited to talk about the Oscars, though. Conan was great.
Conan was amazing. Now, did you and your aunt have an Oscars ballot? Because I want to say that I did host a viewing party. That's what I usually do. This is especially exciting because we're usually together. I truly have no idea your thoughts about this award ceremony, but I thought you should know I did win the Oscar pool.
I'm very impressed with you. I did too, but that's because no one else played. It was just my aunt and my cousin, who's a lovely older gay gentleman. They hadn't seen enough of the movies. They were like pro-Conclave because they had just seen Conclave, but I was definitely the most well-versed in the Oscar movies.
I know. I make the same mistake every year, Chelsea, which is I print out the ballots like 2 minutes before the award show starts. And then everyone participates, but they always are like, what's the prize when someone wins? And I forget to have something. Next year, I have to get a fake award from Hollywood Boulevard, and that's...
Yeah, I was about to suggest that.
Instead, I pull down our fake award, the Every Outfit Award, and then also the golden hanger that I pilfered from unnamed celebrity I used to work for.
I don't know if you should be broadcasting that.
Anyway, where should we begin?
I guess with the opening monologue, during the Oscars, there's always parodies of the films that were nominated, and we really should have seen the substance parody coming, but it was so good.
Well, I don't know. Some years they don't do the inserting the host into the movies that are nominated that year, and I know this is a bit that Billy Crystal invented, and maybe it's my age, but I'm sorry, I expect that when I watch the Oscars. And I think Conan showed a lot of restraint of just localizing it to the substance and not trying to make a bit throughout all of the movies.
Yeah.
I have no doubt maybe that was pitched, but once they got to Emilia Perez, they were like, let's back out of this.
Although I think they could have done something funny with Conclave, potentially. He could have been a vaping cardinal also.
It's funny to think how much Emilia Perez impacted the actual award show, because it's probably the reason we didn't get performances for Best Original Song, which is kind of what is done every single year. And it's definitely why we didn't get the Fab Five format for Best Actor and Best Actress, because they didn't want to put anyone in the awkward position of having to say something nice about Carla Sofia Gascon, given everything that happens.
Yeah, she definitely impacted that part of the show, but I think the choice to not have the nominated songs perform was because of Wicked. They realized people actually want to see Defying Gravity performed. They don't care about any of these songs because none of them are good.
Which, if I'm remembering correctly, the Wizard of Oz medley was even before the opening monologue, right?
Yeah, I think so. And you could imagine how much that hit for me. I mean, Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Home are incredibly personally significant to me, just outside of the very dramatic situation that I was in. And when Cynthia Erivo started singing Home, my eyes were fully welling up with tears. And then I hear my aunt go, her nails are too much jewelry. And I was relieved because I was like, oh, she's not caught up in her feelings about this. It's just me. She's thinking about Cynthia Erivo's manicure choices.
Your aunt was going full fashion police. See, I had to explain to the people I was watching it with why Cynthia Erivo looked like she was wearing Carrie Bradshaw's wedding dress.
Well, I think they both were amazing. Ariana Grande's Schiaparelli performance look was my favorite look of the entire Oscars. It was just so classically beautiful and breathtaking and such a fun sort of slightly abstract interpretation of Dorothy. And then when she turned around to reveal the 3D ruby slipper that was like lodged in her back, incredible.
at first glance, looking at her from front on, you were like, wow, that's a very contained Schiaparelli look. And then once you turned, it was like, there's the surrealism. Got it.
Cynthia Erivo's look I wasn't as into, despite loving all of the references that it was born from, right? Because it was Vivian Westwood. It looked like a traditional Vivian Westwood wedding gown with a full skirt. But it had these 3D flowers affixed to the bodice and the hip. And it was referencing my favorite Vivian Westwood look of all time, which we've talked about on the podcast before because someone called in and asked about this. The wedding dress that Stella Tennant wore, where her hands were tied behind her back. That was an updated version of that look. But it was also a tribute to Hattie McDaniel and what she wore when she won for Gone with the Wind. But I still don't think all of these things came together. I think the flowers did give, like, you know, like the flowers on the outdoor dining, like shacks that are now on the streets since COVID.
Oh, the COVID corrals, as I've taken to calling them. Yes, the fake flowers to make it less depressing.
The fake flowers that Chloe 70 hates.
Right. Not to sound like my mother, but it was a lot of look where really the performances did speak for themselves.
Flawless performance and defying gravity, obviously incredible.
So back to Conan's monologue. So he was born from Demi Moore. I thought that was a genius inserting him into the footage, which, my God, made me miss this bit from the Oscars, but also more specifically the MTV Movie Awards, where they would do that all the time. They would place the host into the movies. I watched the behind the scenes. They built a fake Demi Moore body that he then goes into and goes out of.
Money well spent.
And then he came out to do his monologue, and it was great.
It was great. I don't think we need a controversial Oscars host this year. You know, we don't need an edgy Oscars. We need a funny Oscars, a unifying Oscars. And he's a master.
Yeah, we need a man who's Harvard educated that took all of that education to really make the silliest bits humanly possible.
True.
Were you surprised that he referenced Carla Sofia Gascon?
If he hadn't, it would have been horrible. Like, to not address the elephant in the room would have been a bad mistake. But the joke wasn't mean-spirited, and it ultimately dovetailed into a very self-deprecating joke about his own hosting abilities.
Little fact for you, Nora uses the F word 479 times. That's three more than the record set by Carla Sofia Gascon's publicist. You tweeted what? Carla Sofia Gascon is here tonight. And yeah. And Carla, if you are going to tweet about the Oscars, remember, my name is Jimmy Kimmel.
I don't know how you were watching it. I was watching it on ABC and not Hulu. But when the camera went to go cut to Carla Sofia Gascon, it didn't. It was just like a random person in the audience.
I know. I was so upset. I didn't think they were going to. They finally did. At the end.
They found her eventually.
They didn't do it when he did the joke about her publicist.
And it's funny because post-Oscars, I just showed you this, the internet has discovered maybe the funniest gif from Amelia Perez, which is when Amelia Perez briefly flashes her gun.
So good.
To which the person I saw just quote tweeted was like, what is this movie about? But that would have been, I mean, career ruining, but I was like, that would have been funny if she did that, like pulled a fake gun as a reaction shot.
Also, the bit with John Lithgow was perfect, where they sort of tease the idea that if your speech goes on for too long, we're going to cut to John Lithgow looking really sad in the audience. And I wish they would have actually done that and enforced that, because we all would have come away from this experience with a much higher opinion of Adrien Brody.
I get why they couldn't pay the bit off, but I agree with you. I think everyone in the room and at home would have appreciated flashing to John Lithgow once or twice during Adrien Brody's nearly 6-minute speech. This is a bit that Conan has done before, because I remember when he hosted the Emmys one year, he brought Bob Newhart out in an airlock tube and was like, Bob Newhart has 3 hours of oxygen. So if anyone goes even a minute over, you are responsible for killing living legend Bob Newhart. And then it cuts to Bob Newhart, who clearly, I mean, this is the bit, but like didn't realize that he didn't have enough oxygen. And throughout the show, they just kept cutting to him. And at the end of the show, they release him. So I'm fine with recycling bits. This worked.
What did you think about the Adam Sandler bit, though?
I thought it was great. I know because I used to watch the old TBS show and I listened to his podcast. They're buddies. They're buddies from back in the SNL days, and they're neighbors, and their kids went to school together. So they like prank each other all of the time, which he has talked about. Calling in someone like Adam Sandler to do a 4-minute bit, it's not like Adam Sandler was there, was nominated there throughout the show. It was like, hey, drive from your home in the Palisades or Malibu to Hollywood to do this 5-minute bit.
I think that could have been a 30-second bit. I love seeing Adam Sandler, obviously, but I also feel like this might have needed a wardrobe person, because I do think his personal style is really great, usually.
Yes, it's lampooning his style, which I think has had a renaissance that people appreciate, but it's, you're not in a tux, and this is a tux-worthy evening.
A teal hoodie? A fitted teal hoodie? Just not what I associate with him. I associate oversize with Adam Sandler. What else was good? The costume design bit?
I did reference earlier in relation to Carla Sophia Gascon the idea of the Fab Five format, which is normally utilized for the acting categories, which I've always found awkward because it's like you have to find five people who know the people nominated so they can say something nice about them.
I like it because we always get major people that otherwise would not be attending the Oscars.
But I felt like employing it for the creative categories makes a lot more sense because you have the people who are already there because their films are nominated giving a personal anecdote about the film that they worked on with that person.
Bowen Yang was very funny.
Bowen Yang was the only person in costume.
From Wicked. And that was the winning costumes designed by Paul Tazewell, who did Wicked. Happy for him. Would have probably voted for Nosferatu, but what can you do?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I fill out my Oscar ballot to win. So I did put Wicked, even though I don't feel like Wicked should have won for costumes.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that it won. But it's cool, like, Paul Tazewell is more of like a Broadway costume designer. Like, he has done film work, obviously. He was also nominated for West Side Story, the Spielberg. But historically, he's been like one of the really big, like, Broadway costumers for years. And there's a few of them that do everything, and he is one of them. One of the three.
Interesting. I did feel this immense relief when the night was over because I was like, we're done. We're done with Wicked press after a year. And then I realized the second film's coming out in November.
I'm hyped.
Wicked, colon, for good? I'm adding a question mark to that emphasis.
I just like the idea that any film could have a sequel with that subtitle, like Seven, for good.
Conclave, for good.
Oh, also, obviously I was delighted by the Color Purple reunion. That was deeply healing because Whoopi and Oprah were at odds with each other for a while. They obviously did the Color Purple together. And then in the early 2000s, it sort of came out that they had this feud or were not friends because Oprah did her Legends Ball, right?
Right, yeah.
If you guys don't know what the Legends Ball is, it was a 3-day celebration at Oprah's Montecito house, which celebrated like exceptional Black women. And everyone was there. It was like Aretha Franklin, Rosa Parks, Toni Morrison, like literally everyone but Whoopi Goldberg. Every single person. So people were like, oh my God, they have beef. Whoopi said, like, in a New York Times interview, I remember that she had never watched the Oprah show. Then in 2011, Whoopi comes on the Oprah show and they have their big, like, talking out their feelings episode. I'm just going to play a clip of it now.
Whoopi came up. Can I share this? Whoopi came up to me and she said, can I just ask you something? Really? She said, can I just ask you something? Did I do something to you? And I said, what are you talking about? She says, all these years, you know, we've been disconnected, and I just want to know, did I do something? I said, all these years, I thought you were mad at me. All these years, I thought that you thought, I don't know what I thought.
It's crazy.
It was crazy. Yeah. So I thought, you think I'm mad at you?
Yeah.
I thought you were mad at me.
So we still don't really know what happened.
If there's ever discord between us, I vow to bring it up on the off chance that neither of us are actually mad at each other.
So that's what made the Color Purple reunion that much more impactful to me. So nice seeing them.
You were tearing up and your aunt was like, what is Whoopi wearing?
She actually didn't say that. I'm trying to think of some of her other bitchy comments. I do remember her looking at Cillian Murphy and being like, I just can't figure out if he's attractive or not. And you know what? Same.
I hope she got the answer before she went to the great beyond, though.
I don't think she did. There's no closure with Cillian.
She's at the pearly gates and she's like, do you think Cillian Murphy's attractive? You made him our Lord and Savior.
He does look like Kylie Jenner. And I mean that as a compliment.
Oh my God. Okay, but they were coming out to honor Quincy Jones.
Yeah, this was a really good night for The Wiz, shockingly enough, because we then got the Queen Latifah performance.
Again, this felt a little bit like the MTV Music Video Awards, right? Where they would have like two really big people bring them out to honor another person who was only there to introduce a musical number. A bit within a bit within a bit.
It was nice seeing Daryl Hannah voice support for Ukraine. I feel like the Oscars needs a political moment, an activist moment. And we also got that when No Other Land won Best Documentary.
That's right. Daryl Hannah came out saying, Slava Ukraine, the real badasses are the editors, that was the award she was there to present, which I thought was very skillful. She was ostensibly there to honor Kill Bill Volume 2, but I checked, Chelsea, that movie did not come out 20 years ago. It came out 21 years ago.
It also was nominated for 0 Oscars, quite famously.
Very bizarre.
Although, of course, it will outlast many of the Best Picture winners of the last 20 years, certainly.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you who won.
Just seems weird to remind us of a film that you never recognized.
We're doing the good. We'll get into the bad and the ugly of the show, but there was a lot of, I'll say, bizarre programming that wasn't exactly tied to any particular anniversary. But continuing on with the good, I love when Ben Stiller shows up to present an award.
Yes.
And when Bowen Yang came out in costume, and he was the only one in costume, it reminded me of the year that Ben Stiller came out in full Avatar blue makeup and spoke Na'vi and then jokingly regretted it.
Yeah.
And this was, the stage wouldn't work correctly. He was supposed to be shot up from below and
there was a mechanical failure of some kind. Similar comedy gags to Sabrina Carpenter's Grammys performance.
Right.
Another thing I loved was Anora sweeping. I love an upset.
Did Anora sweep or did Sean Baker sweep? Because Sean Baker won Best Editor, Original Screenplay, Director, and Best Picture, making him the first person to win 4 Academy Awards in 1 year. Walt Disney did previously hold this record, Chell, but it was for 4 different films.
Why not? He deserved to win in all of those categories. Obviously, it's nice when the Oscars are a little more evenly distributed. Just winning Best Picture and Best Director, I think, would be enough. But people were sick of Anora losing everything. And by people, I mean Academy voters.
Not to sound like someone that uses FanDuel, but I went all in on Anora winning these big categories because I was like, even though I feel like The Brutalist should win in these categories, I'm looking at the odds and it, you know, Sean Baker won the PGA, WGA, DGA. So I'm gonna go all in on Anora, but knowing how Academy voters are through those anonymous ballots and seeing how many people were like, I could not finish The Brutalist, I wonder if Anora to them was like more palatable. I'm not saying that it's not deserving of these awards. It's obviously nominated, but I just wonder if it's as simple and stupid as, like, a bunch of people couldn't finish The Brutalist.
See, I thought that Conclave was going to win Best Picture. That just seems like a Best Picture type movie.
This is true.
And I know how people feel about The Brutalist. And Anora, frankly, isn't the kind of film you would think would win Best Picture.
No, and it is interesting, the back-to-back Poor Things to Anora win.
Yeah, thank God Taste is celebrated for once.
Taste, but also two movies and two performances ostensibly about sex workers, which has then led to this internet conversation about, like, every Best Actress has played a prostitute at some point. And I don't think that's true.
I'm trying to think about Kathy Bates playing a sex worker.
Yeah, that's the thing. Or Meryl Streep. Are people giving a very ungenerous read to Sophie's Choice? Like, I don't know.
No, this is not true.
It's not.
And I think the response to Anora really speaks to how conservative people are these days.
Mikey Madison did win Best Actress. I did have Demi Moore winning. This was tough, and I have to be honest, I was kind of bummed out the rest of the show.
I obviously love Mikey Madison. Those of you who have listened to the pod since day one know that we have been riding for her for a really long time. So I was very happy for her. This did feel validating. But yeah, of course, this was Demi Moore's year. This was her moment. We loved The Substance. When she lost, I just kind of wanted The Substance score to start playing. But watching Mikey Madison accept that Oscar really does prove the thesis of that film.
I mean, that's the irony of Mikey Madison winning, is that a younger version, paler, dark-haired actress won the Academy Award from Demi Moore. And for me, the insult to injury, Chelsea, is I was watching this Hollywood Reporter photo shoot with Mikey Madison that they did after the Oscars. And guess what? She's got two tiny dumb dogs like Demi Moore, too.
No.
Yes. I think that's the biggest insult. This is pilaf erasure.
Yeah, it is too bad that Demi didn't just vomit blood all over everyone.
And Chelsea, do you know that Mikey Madison marks the first ghost face to ever win an Academy Award? And here I thought it would be Matthew Lillard.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
By the way, someone posted that on Twitter and someone was like, way to spoil Scream 5 for me. It's like, hasn't that movie been out for 7 years? You know the producers of Scream are like, can we unkill her? Although we haven't talked about this. It seems that every person who's died in a Scream film is coming back for this new movie. What is it, the ghost of Ghostface?
I have no idea what this is going to be, but Scream always surprises us. I do think it's one of the most dependable franchises. So they'll figure it out.
And if I'm the producers, I'm like, how do we unfry Mikey Madison?
And also, how do we recast Melissa Barrera? Anyway.
All right, let's get into the bad. And I would say the worst thing about this award show was the Emilia Perez composers who started singing when they won Best Song.
I feel violated by that song. Shall we just re-traumatize ourselves and the listeners?
And thank you to Emilia, Emilia, Epifania, Emilia, Epifania.
It's not even the song. She just starts singing Emilia Perez. And I was pulling the clip for this episode and I realized I believe that Jacques Audiard went on stage with them to accept the award. I don't believe he wrote the song with those two songwriters. And I swear, and guys, let me know if you hear it too, there is a man when she starts singing who I think says, "Wrap it up." And I think that's Jacques Audiard. So even he's feeling embarrassed about the crew of Emilia Perez. Like, Jacques Audiard, who unleashed this movie on all of us, is now, I think, back on our side of like, oh God, what have I done? For those who have not seen Emilia Perez, the song that won is El Mal. It is not the Penis to Vagina song, which was sadly not nominated. I know I mentioned this when we were discussing the Color Purple reunion, which is this idea of bits on bits, but that James Bond tribute came out of nowhere, Chelsea. As far as I know, it wasn't a major celebratory year for the character because I checked. Ian Fleming released the first Bond book in 1953, and the first film came out in 1962. And this was especially bizarre to see because the most recent story about James Bond was that Barbara Broccoli, who is the rights holder, sold it to Amazon for like $1 billion so it can be contentified. So when I saw Margaret Qualley, I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Is Margaret Qualley the new James Bond and this is how they're announcing it?
Okay, I didn't mind seeing Margaret Qualley. I actually really liked the Margaret Qualley part of this bit.
No, she's an incredible dancer and it's always a joy to see her dance, but it was like, what is happening?
No, I agree. It was deeply bizarre. What did you think of Doja Cat?
I thought Doja Cat was great. That was the other surprising thing, because last week's episode I told you that Ray, Lisa from Blackpink, and Doja Cat were going to perform. I had assumed for the In Memoriam, which we will get to in a second, but to have that trio doing a James Bond tribute, also weird.
Yeah, I think Ray was quite good. Doja Cat, I didn't love. Also, my aunt said the bitchiest thing. She was like, I was under the impression that Doja Cat was much younger than this woman. And I was like, so you know it's her, but you just think she looks old? I was impressed that she knew who Ray was.
I don't even know who Ray is.
I know. She was completely like with it and up on everything. It's insane.
Not the best bit. They were clearly trying to cut time. I think we either needed the James Bond tribute or the Wiz tribute, not both.
Also, no David Lynch tribute.
Every year, the In Memoriam section is going to piss someone off. And choices were made, Chelsea. The most curious of which was the choice to play Lacrimosa from Mozart's Requiem in D minor. On its face, nothing wrong with that. The definition of the word Requiem is an act of remembrance, and Lacrimosa is a Latin word that means weeping or tearful. The issue is that that music cue cinematically has less to do with a character dying and has been used to highlight a character in trouble or their undoing. See the Big Lebowski, Lucy, Intolerable Cruelty. But it also just heightened the feeling when increasingly there was no special tribute to David Lynch. Where I was like, what is happening? There were two In Memoriam segments about Gene Hackman.
I know, and Laura Dern and Isabella Rossellini were sitting next to each other in the audience. What we needed was Kyle MacLachlan, Laura Dern, Isabella Rossellini introducing a performance by Lana Del Rey of Blue Velvet into In Heaven from Eraserhead, the song that the Radiator Woman sings, with a montage of all of his beautiful movies playing in the background. Like, why couldn't we have had that?
Absolutely. David Lynch passed nearly 2 months ago. Gene Hackman passed nearly a week ago, but you were able to get Morgan Freeman out of retirement to talk about Gene Hackman, and you had Isabella Rossellini, who was nominated, who brought Laura Dern as her date, and Isabella Rossellini wore blue velvet, and we got nothing?
It's so crazy. Also, we really deserved the Twin Peaks theme, like, performed by an orchestra.
Also, that's more appropriate to play in an In Memoriam than Mozart's Requiem in D minor. To be fair, David Lynch never won an Academy Award, although he's been nominated 4 times.
Yeah, and that's deeply embarrassing. They could try to overcompensate for that now.
I absolutely agree with you. They also could have given Isabella Rossellini the Academy Award instead of Zoe Saldana.
I'm fine with the fact that Zoe got it, but I do think that this sort of combination of Conclave and the passing of David Lynch is a real moment where Isabella Rossellini should at the very least been on that stage for some reason, even if it was just presenting something.
All right. That was the bad. Shall we get into the ugly of the Oscars?
Sure.
Adrian Brody's speech. My issue with Adrian Brody's Oscar speech is that you cannot be simultaneously that ready to win an Oscar and that unprepared to make a speech. He knew he was going to win. He, as he also stated, has won an award before. So you know that it happens in the back half of the award show. You didn't think to spit out your gum before?
I know, and to add insult to injury, you threw it at your girlfriend from like 10 feet away? The woman who's already had to fuck Harvey Weinstein? Like, what more does this woman have to go through?
Fucking swallow the piece of gum. Okay, it will take 4 years to digest or whatever urban legend I was told as a child.
Well, it also sucks because it completely overshadowed the performance that he won for, which was absolutely brilliant, genius level acting.
Although I did lose in this category because I went with Timmy. I thought there might be an upset.
Well, I instantly regretted that Timmy didn't win.
It seemed like a rehash of previous award show speeches that he had done. It was a little bizarre that 90 seconds in, the music did come in and they did begin to play him off. I wasn't mad at the, please stop playing the music, I've done this before. Because Julia Roberts did something similar when she won Best Actress. She referred to the composer as Stickman, and she said, Stickman, don't play me off. So it can work and it can be funny and charming. The problem is he then bumbled through 3 more minutes of a speech.
Yeah.
The thing that I did take perverse pleasure from was when he referred to Georgina Chapman's children. And he said, you know, Papa won. I got a perverse joy of the idea of imagining Harvey Weinstein sitting in prison, watching a feed of the Oscars, the award show that he used to run, now watching Adrian Brody refer to his children as his own.
Yeah, that's the kind of nightmare scenario that that man truly deserves.
Does this mean that Adrian Brody is due to make another M. Night Shyamalan film?
Not the worst idea. I think the ugliest thing that happened at the Oscars was the fact that Wicked beat The Brutalist for production design, which speaks to such a huge taste deficit in the Academy. Like, Wicked looked like Midjourney Oz, and The Brutalist is an ode to one of the chicest design movements in history. The Brutalist is the story of a man who has such good taste that it ruins his life.
I think what was stunning for me watching Wicked win Best Production Design is that the production designer is a man named Nathan Crowley. And because I'm a huge-ass nerd, that is Christopher Nolan's exclusive production designer. This is the man who figured out how to make Batman grounded, and he's doing Wicked? Speaking of The Brutalist, can we discuss what's going on between The Brutalist composer and Brady Corbet? Because they have a very interesting vibe. Brady Corbet straight up kissed him on the lips when he won the Oscar. And I'm showing Chelsea right now, there is some production still where this composer, who, if you don't remember, he basically looks like the bald guy Yuri from Anora. I thought it was him. I was like, wow, he also did the music for The Brutalist? This guy is multi-talented. But I'm showing Chelsea this weird black and white press still where Brady Corbet is holding what seems to be a naked Brutalist composer.
Oh, wow. It's kind of like John and Yoko, like Rolling Stone cover Annie Leibovitz vibes.
Yeah, what do we think is going on there?
I say normalize men being able to just kiss on the lips.
Ooh.
Normalize kissing on the lips in general. This is also what undid Angelina Jolie and her brother. It's not open mouth.
Do you want to kiss me on the lips, Chel?
Maybe later.
All right, I think it's time to get into some fashion. Always great to do in an audio medium.
I feel like it was Ariana Grande's night. Her red carpet look, the pink scaparelli, made the biggest impact, I think.
Well, we knew as soon as we saw that on the couture runway in January, someone was wearing that on the red carpet.
But it was almost so perfect that it didn't look human, or it didn't look like human hands could have possibly made that. It was really, really like otherworldly looking.
And I wonder if they recreated that dress for her, or they just like lopped off a foot of tulle underneath it so she could wear it.
No, they made it for her because it was a different color. The original one was more of like a champagne color, not like a blush pink.
Right.
I feel like this is what an Oscars dress should be because it like adhered to the conventions of an Oscar dress while also subverting those same conventions.
It did speak to a red carpet trend of like extreme volume, which just made me think of everyone's getting back to this 80s era opulence. I know this is a chronically online phrase right now, but I have to ask, is this a recession indicator that everyone is dressing like it's Reagan era 1980s?
It might be. I'm into it. If nothing else, it's dramatic. Like Cynthia Erivo also wore a very massive, very costumey Louis Vuitton gown. Kim Kardashian, even, who has avoided this silhouette like the plague, wore a massive Balenciaga gown at the Vanity Fair party that looked like a wedding gown.
I mean, it looked like her wedding gown to Chris Humphries.
Yeah, true. That was the last time she wore that silhouette. But I loved Abra Rohrwacher, who wore one of those insane Valentino Couture gowns. I was wondering if anyone was going to wear those. And she looked so insane.
She was there to present costume.
Yeah, and I think it's crazy that we're not only getting the full skirts back, we're getting the combination of full skirts and long sleeves, which we really haven't seen since the 80s, since like, you know, Princess Diana and all of that.
You know who I also felt had a conservative outfit, although it was not, did not have extreme volume or long sleeves, was Mikey Madison in Dior. And I feel like her styling choices throughout the award season, beginning with some questionable Chanel looks at Cannes, have been very safe.
Yes.
But I wonder if that was maybe a specific sartorial choice given her character's occupation in Anora. Because I feel like the styling choices of Mikey Madison kind of go against, I hate to say her persona, but like she's young. She's in very cool, edgy movies. Just very safe.
Yeah, of course. And it's, this gown is beautiful and timeless. The photos of her winning this Oscar will always look good. It will be akin to Gwyneth Paltrow's Oscars win. But I've noticed something with women her age, and it's that like when someone is too young and full of life for like a full like Rita Hayworth and Gilda kind of look, they just add a little bow to make it look youthful. This was also the case with Elle Fanning, who wore the first Givenchy red carpet look from Sarah Burton's New Era.
Although I felt like someone who could have worn a bow was Emma Stone. That Vuitton outfit needed something.
I've already completely forgotten what she wore. Hold on, let me Google.
It was nude. It's not exactly an empire-waisted dress, but it had an indentation that was perfect for a ribbon or something decorative.
See, I'm just so bored with dresses like this generally. And I don't want anyone to get it twisted. I think that all of these women look beautiful. And it's not about that. It's more about the fact that we see this year after year, these same gowns. This year we had Demi Moore in one of them also. Selena Gomez also wore one of them. And they were all like impeccably constructed, well executed. I think Selena Gomez's in particular, the way it sort of was off the shoulder, but in this very rigid way. But to me, it's just something that we've seen over and over again every single year for so long now that I don't really think it has much impact.
One more note about Demi Moore, who was in Armani Privé, is, again, there's nothing worse than a woman in an Oscar dress that resembles an award, not win an award.
Well, it wasn't gold, though.
This is true.
It wasn't gold. So it could have been worse in that regard. Also, I think we should acknowledge Demi Moore and Halle Berry. It's a level of not aging that I don't think I've ever seen before.
Oh, I thought you were going to speak of their metallic dresses. Halle Berry in more of a mirrored...
No, again, they both look beautiful. I'm completely indifferent to both of their dresses, but I was just quite taken and frankly shocked by the fact that it's possible to not age to that degree. Halle Berry especially. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, she does look the same as when she herself won her Academy Award.
Yeah.
20 years ago?
See, mentally, I feel like that was 10 years ago. But yeah, it was probably 35 years ago. Oh, also, I learned something horrible, Lauren. The difference between 1955 and 1990 is the same difference as 1990 to this year.
Right. 25 years.
35 years.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
So when we were kids in the 90s, however far away the 50s seemed to us, like that was a million years ago. Women were housewives and it was the civil rights movement and all of that. That was a blink of an eye between that and when we were born, which to me, I was like shocked when I saw some random TikTok video that brought that to my attention.
I definitely know we're getting older because I've been inundated with TikTok fan edit videos of edits of girls in Broad City and of like, man, what a time to be alive in 2013. I'm like, oh my God, it's happening. The younger generation is idolizing how we grew up. Like we used to idolize Gen X living in the East Village or something in the early 90s.
Yeah, they're like shopping at American Apparel in 2007 must have been incredible.
Not no.
Do you still have your disco pants?
No, but I was looking at an older photo of myself and I do regret throwing away my striped bodysuits. They were good. So before we get into our favorite looks, I feel like another talked about look, and frankly, to your point, someone who was trying to do something different, Zoe Saldana in Saint Laurent. What do we think of the silhouette?
I love the silhouette. To me, it was a very classic silhouette. It looks like something that Yves Saint Laurent himself did, and he probably did. I don't know what the reference was.
Again, another felt very 80s.
But I liked the sheer gloves and the what I assume was some sort of Cartier necklace or something. I thought she looked beautiful. Also, we need to talk about Timmy.
Oh, yes. How could we forget?
Timmy wore this, you know, baby chick colored Givenchy ensemble.
You know that at the moment I'm living at my parents' house because there's no water and power at the house. And we went up to the tennis club that they belonged to and they were having trivia night, Chell. And this was one of the trivia questions, which was, what color was Timmy's suit? And I lost. I wasn't actually playing, but in my head I was playing. And I was like, well, that's a buttercream suit. According to this trivia, it was a canary yellow
suit.
That's
not canary yellow.
I agree with you.
I would have fought back. It's much closer to a buttercream. It's a pastel yellow.
Well, then I felt dumb because I was about to get into a fight with a septuagenarian. I was like, you're wrong.
No, you should have stood your ground on that one. But see, I liked the suit. I did not like the shoe choice. Because if we're going to do this monochromatic look, that has to extend to the shoes as well. But apparently these were his lucky shoes that he wore at the expense of his outfit. And I don't get the logic there, because the Oscars isn't like a football game. The winner is already determined before you put your lucky shoes on.
I know, but if we've learned anything, he's very sports-brained. Like, that's something that a sports bro does.
The same logic doesn't apply here.
Should we get into his date, Kylie Jenner?
Oh, I loved her look. There needs to be a bombshell at the Oscars or someone that's doing something a little racy. Cher obviously occupied that role for many years.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen the comparisons of Kylie's award looks with Timmy to that of Elizabeth Hurley when she was with Hugh Grant, but it's very apt.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's on the mood board, and I think it's very correct. Also, I like them together. I don't think Timmy is as smart as people think he is, and I don't think Kylie Jenner is as dumb as people think she is. I think they are well matched together.
I love both of them, so I am nothing but supportive of this union.
I also like that she goes to award shows with him. You know, I think we've gotten a little overly private with celebrity couples. And even though she hasn't walked the red carpet with him, which is a good boundary to have, I like that she's there.
Also, her Miu Miu gown does look like it was designed in 2025 and not 2005, which you can't say about all of these dresses.
Sorry, I'm now realizing... I'm thinking of the math, and 2005 is 20 years ago. Fuck my life.
Okay, so who are your best dressed?
I really liked Miley Cyrus and Alexander McQueen. Was I aware that this was McQueen until I looked up the outfit credit? No. Does it feel particularly McQueen-esque? Sure, why not?
It could be Versace. It could be anything.
I thought it was Gucci. It's more giving all of Cher's Oscar looks from the 80s and early 90s condensed into one outfit. And that's what I like about it.
I think she looked beautiful, but to me, it didn't do a ton. Although the new face is looking incredible.
What is going on? Because her eyebrows are bleached. And I was like, is that it? Or did she get work done? And this
so many things.
Is her bleaching her eyebrows kind of like when Kim Kardashian goes blonde to distract from cosmetic procedures she had done?
I think so.
Interesting.
I love Miley. And like I said, I think the new face is great, but it is a new face. And the way that it was rolled out was so incredibly stealth that I don't think a lot of people have noticed.
I thought it was the bleached eyebrows. Who else did you enjoy?
Like I said, Ariana Grande performance look was my favorite. I also love Jeff Goldblum. In Prada. He had a cream tuxedo jacket, a floral Prada shirt, a purple scarf, and most crucially, the most stunning boutonniere I have ever seen. And it was like, it was not a traditional one. They used orchids and they used amaranthus, which is like that green mossy rope-like flower.
You're saying Cynthia Erivo probably should have gone more in this direction.
I'm just saying that we should bring boutonnieres back and we should bring real flowers back. And I think that this was so chic, and I'm sure that Prada designed this boutonniere, and I'm curious who they got to make it in LA. There are a lot of amazing floral designers here.
You're like, for my own personal interest, I would love to know which LA-based florist.
Seriously, I follow them all. I follow all of the sort of editorial stylists in Los Angeles. And I just thought this was so chic. Also, I loved the photos of him at the Oscars looking at photos of himself on Getty Images. He's so real for that.
Absolutely. I was just going to add that I don't think there's a better pairing of a star personality with a brand. Certainly a male celebrity better than Jeff Goldblum and Prada. We've talked about a lot of the outfits that I enjoyed. I just want to add Coleman Domingo and Valentino. There is no one else taking risks like this, especially a male celebrity. I cannot wait to see. As I've said before, I assume he's going to wear Valentino to the Met. I cannot wait to see what they cook up together.
Do you know how he met his husband?
Yes, I do know this story.
I think everyone has seen that TikTok video this week, but he met his partner of 17 years on Craigslist, like a misconnection thing. He went to write an ad for this guy he had seen on the street, and he found an ad for him. And it's so incredibly touching.
And they are two of the most attractive, well-dressed people you've ever seen. Although I guess I should stand corrected about there's no other male celebrity, male actor taking risks like he does, because I'm going to put Jeremy Strong and Laura Piano on my best dress list. Now, Chelsea, do I like this look? Maybe. But what I do really like is an actor with a strong point of view and a dedication to a particular designer, because Laura Piano has dressed him this entire awards run.
I liked his look a lot. The color is what I really loved, because it's a shade of brown that is rarely attempted. It's more like a mushroom color, like it was a bit muted. And he looks less stuffy than other people. It doesn't look like he's putting on an old Hollywood costume to go to the Oscars.
Again, I think this gets at the heart, because clearly he was on a lot of people's worst dress list, but it gets to the heart of our problem with fashion police or worst dress list, where his look is treated as if he fucked up on the way to wear a traditional tux. And it's like, no, this was very well thought out and purposeful. And that's what I like about it.
Some people just aren't ready for flamboyant menswear, even now.
So the Oscars has an issue, or should I say the Oscars red carpet has an issue that a lot of award shows have, which is the after party looks are often way better than the red carpet looks.
And that's because with the Oscars, the people that attend are the people that are either nominated or part of the ceremony. Whereas with the Vanity Fair after party, the hottest people converge, because you don't really get a ton of glamour outside of the acting categories anyway.
The reason we don't have fashion police is the reason the red carpet got so boring, is everyone got so worried about being on the worst dress list that no one is taking risks. But because the Vanity Fair is just an after party, I mean, a very cool after party, but I feel like that's where people are willing to take risks.
I do think the tides are turning, though, a bit. I think even at the Oscars this year, people wore things that were less safe than usual. Even if we're just talking about Cynthia Erivo, Whoopi Goldberg, who we actually didn't talk about and should have, she also had a full skirt and wore this really insane looking Christian Siriano gown. I was into it, but I think that it's a very interesting choice for her, because Whoopi is someone that we're used to seeing in button down shirts and pants. She's tatted up. You know what I mean? She has no eyebrows. It's not the kind of person you would think that would run towards the most over-the-top, feminine, voluminous Oscars gown. But she's done this time and time again.
And the coloring of her dress and the silhouette reminded me of Dita Von Teese's Vivian Westwood wedding dress to Marilyn Manson. Oh, yeah. Sort of a purple-green hue.
I'm into it. I think it was interesting.
Okay, back to the Vanity Fair after party. What were your favorite looks?
Well, Sarah Paulson, obviously. I think Sarah Paulson in Marc Jacobs was the best dressed of everyone, including the people at the actual Oscars. It was a really perfect statement about body modification and beauty standards in the age that we live in.
Is this the first time we're seeing someone wear those Marc Jacobs looks that wasn't an editorial?
I'm sure we've seen it. We haven't seen anything from that collection, though, the last collection.
Right.
That was so cool. And that's the kind of thing that I dream of someone wearing to the Oscars. Someone that's nominated. We never get anything that avant-garde that also perfectly fits with the theme.
A little difficult to sit in, though, for 3 to 4 hours, probably.
Well, Ariana survived somehow.
My favorite look that took my breath away was Zoe Kravitz in Custom Saint Laurent, which was based on a look from the spring 1996 couture collection, which had a little lace cutout featuring a bum.
Well, even before that, I think, I don't know if it was in the 60s, there was a Saint Laurent, like Yves Saint Laurent dress that had that lace panel in the back and you just saw the crack of the ass. Then in that collection, it's like you got 2/3 of the ass. And I think Zoe may have even given even more ass.
No other way to put it. I mean, we're bringing butt cleavage back. That's what's in for 2025.
I'm fine with that. We've seen a resurgence in dresses that are kind of cut out at the hips, right? Mugler has designed a lot of gowns that sort of play with highlighting that part of the body.
Absolutely.
And yeah, we've done all we can do with cleavage.
Well, the ass is the last frontier.
Also, Julia Fox in Dolara. An incredible look that I'm mostly shocked that no one has worn yet, considering it was from a collection that she did 2 years ago. It was like four seasons ago.
Because no one's brave enough to wear it.
I know, but I kind of thought that someone would wear like a gown version of that to the Met Gala, but no one ever did.
Right. Hopefully we're linking to all of these outfits we're discussing, but it's the Dolara dress that's essentially tulle with hair that covers the naughty bits.
Yeah, very Birth of Venus. Lily McMenemy originally modeled it in the show.
For the Nepo models, we had Kendall and Vintage Mugler. She always pulls a great look.
Highly recognizable dress worn by Eva Herzigova in the 90s. It almost looks like lace that's been dipped in rubber or something.
What do you think of Kendall's bob?
I guess I have no thoughts. Do you not like?
I don't love it. And I love a bob on most people, but not on her. I miss the long hair.
Well, she's such a horse girl. I feel like you need long hair when you're a horse girl.
Very true.
Also on the vintage front, I loved Kaia Gerber in a vintage Valentino ensemble. It looked like the edges of the fabric and the tiered ruffles were torn, but they were like impeccably finished. It was just such a beautiful holy grail piece.
I think we should mention friend of the show, Allison Brie, who looked incredible in vintage Versace.
Oh yeah, we should also mention, we're forgetting all of our fabulous friends who worked on the Oscars. Our friend Casey, who is also our colorist, did Conan's hair and grooming, which was so cool. My aunt was very impressed. And our friend Michael Anthony did Ariana Grande's makeup.
Wow, maybe we are more Hollywood insiders than I previously thought, Chelsea.
No, we're not. And that's why we can talk openly and freely about celebrities on this podcast, because you really have to make a choice at a certain point. It's one or the other.
That's true. Don't look for us on the Vanity Fair red carpet or the E! Red carpet. That's not our journey.
It isn't. Well, I guess that does it. Guys, we know that Fashion Month has been happening. It's coming to a close. And we will be talking about all of the fashion shows next week with a very special guest that I am gatekeeping for the moment.
I love it. All right, guys, we have to go back to listening to Lady Gaga's album. I just don't know what to think about it.
Thank you guys for listening, as always. We love you.
And we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Pause up.